You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or in Himalaya. My name is David Rommel. I'm recording this from my hotel room in chilly Chicago, where I have been lucky enough to cover the 2020 NBA All-Star Weekend. As you know, the Miami Heat has been very well represented here with participants in every event, so I'll touch on all of them and how they did throughout the show, but I'm going to start off with the most ridiculous basketball-related controversy that doesn't matter one bit, the slam dunk contest that was won by Miami's very own airplane mode, Derrick Jones Jr. If you didn't hear what happened, Derrick advanced past the first round in a very competitive competition that was also very damn fun. Pat Connaughton and Dwight Howard were eliminated. They each had some pretty good dunks along the way, but eventually DJ went head-to-head with Orlando's Aaron Gordon, who was competing for the third time in a slam dunk contest. DJ and Gordon threw down various dunks, earning a maximum score of 50 from the panel of judges for each of those later rounds. And those judges included Chicago native Dwayne Wade, something that would lead to some controversy later on. On the last dunk of the night, Derrick ran the length of the floor and then he took off from just one step in front of the foul line. Because of that one step, the judges only awarded Derrick a 48. So Gordon, following up that dunk, brought out Celtics rookie Taco Fall, who was 7'5" out of Central Florida, go Knights as my former co-host would say, and he dunked over him. However, he only earned a 47 from the five judges, including Dwayne. Here's where Dwayne comes into play. He was one of the three judges who awarded Aaron a 9 on the dunk. So it was five judges, two of them awarded him a 10, three of them awarded him a 9. And reporting from ESPN's Ramona Shelburne shows that the judges had colluded and tried to keep the competition going, and only two judges were supposed to award a 9, and that Dwayne may or may not have just underscored Gordon to award Derrick the trophy. This is all so ridiculous. I can't overstate that enough. One, it is the slam dunk contest. 4 years ago, we were saying the slam dunk contest was dead. It was brought back to life because of Gordon. He had a fantastic showing a few years ago against Zach LaVine that injected it with some major energy. Last year, however, it was a little disappointing. This year, I think it was as good as it's been. Connaughton was a lot of fun. He had an homage to White Men Can't Jump. Dwight Howard's dunks were a little off because he is a little older. He just does not have the ups that he once did, but they were still fun and entertaining, and he was the weakest link there, but still he did also pay homage to a first dunk of his that had won a slam dunk competition many years ago, where he wore a Superman cape, and he also paid homage to Kobe Bryant, something that was a consistent theme throughout all of Chicago this weekend. But Derrick and Aaron Gordon had some fantastic dunks. They were all a lot of fun. And I can't believe that we're at a point now where Ramona Shelburne, who's done some deep dives into franchises and players and all sorts of different things, is reporting that judges have colluded on a slam dunk contest. Now, the Dwayne thing is also an extra element to this because having given Gordon a 9, where he may or may not have colluded to do so, brings about a lot of controversy. People are saying he was throwing this, that he was cheating, that he's done all sorts of things. Dwayne, for all the respect that he got around the league from fans and from teams and franchises around the league, I got to be honest with you, we forget that he is kind of reviled around the league. He's seen by some as a dirty player. He's seen by some as a guy who has ridden LeBron's coattails, which is all ridiculous, of course. But he's not as, I think, popular for among basketball fans as we expect him to be, or as we believe that he is, and as he is in South Florida. I think the casual fan knows Dwayne Wade because he's on TV, because he's done movies, because he is Dwayne Wade, because he's a Hall of Famer. So all those things taken into consideration, they don't know the nuances about how Dwayne is seen in Boston or L.A. where he broke Kobe's nose, or Boston where he broke Rajon Rondo's arm, and so on and so on. So there is a lot there that is somewhat negative and is still remembered by a lot of the more active fan bases. Anyway, So when he awards Gordon a 9, maybe it's seen as favoritism there. Who knows? I don't see it anyway. As for Gordon's actual dunk over Fall, which is the controversy here, the dunk was somewhat controversial because although Taco Fall is very tall, he was pretty close to the basket. Gordon absolutely pushed off, and in doing so, he also pushed Fall's head down. So it wasn't like he was actually 7'5". He might have been by the time he was finished scrunching down as Aaron was leaping over him, probably closer to 6'10". Regardless, I understand that it's still difficult to leap over anybody. I can't leap over a sheet of paper. You know, for Gordon to be able to leap over anybody of that size is very, very impressive. It was a good dunk, but at the same time, I've talked to Aaron. When I was covering teams in Orlando, I know he takes this very seriously. He's always thought about this, about the slam dunk contest. He's kind of teased at it. He wants to win. He was pissed off after he lost to LaVine a few years ago. He was pissed off that he was injured last year and didn't have a good showing. This was his opportunity to win something and to put his name out there. Nobody wants to be an also-ran, and that's how he's going to be remembered. He's done after this. He said post-game or post-competition that he will not compete in the slam dunk contest again. He's kind of done, and he was also a little pissed off. He said, "I don't know who scored me those nines, but I'm going to find them." I know he was a little joking at that point, but he could see he had some adrenaline to him. Whereas Derek was kind of just taking it easy and chill because that's who just Derek is. He's just very soft spoken that way. Gordon was hyped up, and he was also a little pissed off. He said, "You know, look, I scored 4 5-50s in a row. It should have been over than that. You know, after that, the dunk contest is 4 dunks." I scored more points than anybody else in those first 4 dunks. I don't see why we had to keep competing. And he's got a point there. You know, the first 2 dunks are to eliminate, you know, the first two of 4 contestants there. The last 2 dunks are just basically one-on-ones. But they don't take those first dunks into consideration. So although Gordon did get 50s in the first round, those don't count. The second round he got 50s, but so did Derek. And I'll be honest with you. My overall feeling, and this is not favoritism, I am not biased whatsoever. I like Aaron. I like Derek. I've talked to both of them. I just think Derek's dunks were better. I'll have to be 100% honest with you. Aaron is stronger. He's more forceful. He's not as much of a leaper as Derek is. But, you know, if he had done that dunk that he did a few years ago where he leapt over, you know, the magic mascot stuff, the dragon, I wouldn't be having this argument because I think it's absolutely fair to consider that was one of the best dunks I've ever seen. That wasn't the case. His dunks were really, really, really good. I think Derek's were better. I think they were just more fluid. I think he showed more hops. I think he showed a great amount of force in each of those dunks when he was bringing the ball up from the baseline between his legs, leaping and doing 360s. I mean, those things were incredible. And as for the last dunk where he took off one step in front of the free throw line, he was pissed off. You know, he was shaking his head. He knew he could do that dunk easily. And he knew he just misstepped it. He mistimed it. And he can't just stop in the middle and say, "Oh, I'd like a redo." And so he had to kind of go with it. And unfortunately, he was only awarded the 48. It wound up being enough. But if there's any controversy there, and I think there is somewhat ridiculously, I was talking to, a number of reporters, I don't want to name names here, but a number of reporters, all of whom really thought that Aaron Gordon was robbed. ESPN was basically, I saw somebody saying, or via tweet, that they were basically holding a funeral for Aaron Gordon because of how he was robbed of the competition. Patently ridiculous. I can't believe it's gone to this point. I don't think there was any kind of collusion. I don't think that there was any robbery. I think Derek's dunks were very, very good, and I think they were better. And I think Aaron is a fine competitor, a good person and all that, and I have no problem with his competitive fires, but he did not win that competition. And I honestly think Derek deserved it. And it was his birthday, and he's a good guy, and he had a hell of a show, and it was a lot of fun, and that's all that matters. It was a good competition, probably one of the best ones I've seen in a long, long time. But Derek won it, and I think that's great news for Heat fans, so enjoy that. And I'm sorry for Orlando Magic fans that are somewhat upset feeling that Gordon got robbed. There was no robbery in place there. It's time to move on. And I think we're having you hear a lot of that talk basically because of what happened against LaVine a few years ago. And I can't say that he was robbed against LaVine either. LaVine had some fantastic dunks. It just didn't work out. You can't have, I think they should be able to have, you can't have co-winners. I don't see why the NBA can't allow that. I don't know why the sponsor can't have that. It seems only fair to be able to award two people whose dunks are equally fun and equally great. And that's another thing, too. This is subjective. You know, Candace Parker was one of the judges that gave Aaron a 9, too. Chad Bozeman, who played the Black Panther and has had many other roles in Hollywood, he's the one who gave a 9 as well. Who's to say? Was there collusion there? Were they, you know, biased? Did they have some high Miami favoritism? I don't know. It's ridiculous. So I'm not sure why they're having this argument there. It's fun. It was a great competition. We should all appreciate that and not claim or look for controversy when there clearly wasn't any. I'll talk about the man of the hour at All-Star Weekend. That's Bam Adebayo in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Kendrick Nunn, Duncan Robinson, Jimmy Butler, they were all part of the All-Star festivities, but I want to talk about Bam Adebayo, something that a lot of people around Chicago have been doing. Before even getting to Chicago, Bam was the subject of a fantastic piece from ESPN's Zach Lowe, as well as a follow-up podcast from Lowe about the piece. In the story, Lowe shows what was, to me, another side of Bam, one where he is not just confident in his abilities, but almost downright cocky, fully aware of what he can do. Lowe writes about Bam's upbringing, his high school career, but perhaps most surprisingly, he also talks about his pre-draft workout absolutely annihilating the competition that he faced, and at one time even talking trash to Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra, and the Heat front office. When he was put in a drill where he had to guard smaller wing players, he succeeded in doing so, absolutely, again, dominated the competition, and the talk was, in Bam's words, explicit. At one point, Spo even looked around and wondered whether or not this guy might be a little crazy. Anyway, go read the piece. It's absolutely fantastic. And there are so many great little tidbits there about Bam and his fit in Miami. And then on Saturday, in the first competition of the night, Bam was in a skills competition, knocking off defending winner Spencer Dinwiddie in the first round before moving on to beat Pascal Siakam of Toronto. And in the final, he beat Indiana's Domantas Sabonis to become the second Heat player, after Dwayne Wade, to win the skills competition. Bam was everywhere this weekend. He was at events around the city. He was a subject of talk from media, other players, fans, all asking and wondering about this guy. Because as successful as Miami seasons have been, I think a lot of that is attributed to Jimmy Butler, who is also an immensely popular figure still in Chicago. Bam continues to be, I think, underrated around the league. He's not quite at that point that Chris Middleton was a few years ago, although Middleton is now a two-time All-Star and well-deserving of any kind of attention he gets. As for Bam Adebayo, I think he's still somewhat of an unknown factor. And I mean, look, this has been a trend that's been slowly building. I'm not saying I started any trend, but I started to see a lot more recognition after I wrote about Bam Adebayo. Again, I'm not attributing anything. I just happened to cover the team, and so I saw what other people started seeing. I just happened to be a little bit ahead of the game in that regard. But other national writers started seeing Bam Adebayo and what he can do, and he slowly but surely started getting a lot more attention. You start hearing a lot more buzz about him becoming a potential All-Star player. And then, slowly but surely, it leads up to an All-Star selection, this fantastic piece from Lowe and everything else, and now culminating in his competition in the All-Star weekend there, and he did fantastic. I think there's so much to what Bam does, and we see it all the time, and the competition highlights everything. The fact that he can pass, that he can dribble, that he's faster than you would think of a man his size, and he was just all over the place. Events around the city, everybody wanted to know about Bam, and I think the competition will make much more familiar to both a national and international audience. And if there's a takeaway from all this, this increased media coverage, Lowe's piece, Bam's performance in this weekend, it's that Adebayo, at 22 years old, is a legitimate star and a building block foundation of the Miami Heat. No one could have expected this. When he was drafted late in the lottery a few years ago, there was potential there. There was talent there. But I don't think anybody saw this coming. It was a weird fit because you wound up re-signing Hassan Whiteside that same summer. You wound up signing Kelly Olynyk as a free agent later on. And there's no place for Bam immediately. There's no way of knowing exactly what his fit in this roster is going to be. But even after watching his career unfold and talking with him since he was a rookie, I'm still surprised at how quickly he's reached this point. When I spoke to him one-on-one in Chicago, I asked him about this specifically, and he maintains, you know, similarly to what Zach Lowe wrote about in his piece, that he isn't shocked by all this. Bam knew he was going to be here at some point, and that the difference this year has been just getting the opportunity to show what his incredible talents are and what he can do on the floor. But I also asked him about something else, which I know is something everyone is very interested in as far as Heat Nation is concerned, the active recruiting process that takes place at events like this. He laughed it off. He told me that he thinks our team is pretty good. Those were his words. And you know, as it is right now, he's not thinking too much about changes in the future. But then he kind of clapped me on the shoulder, and he smiled and winked and said, "Hey, you never know. If someone wants to join Miami, we'll just have to wait and see what happens." So clearly people talk. And I think that's, you know, a big part of what happens this weekend, because they're human, because they're curious about why Jimmy Butler chose Miami instead of Philadelphia, you know, why X player might be seen as something different around the league, you know, what the perception of Eric Spoelstra is, you know, from people who actually play for him. And I think it's good to have, you know, you have LeBron there, you have Dwayne around town being a part of so many different festivities. You've got Jimmy and Bam in the same locker room. And of course, they're in the same locker room because they're all part of Team Giannis. And both Bam Adebayo and Giannis Antetokounmpo were co-hosting events around town because they share the same agent. And none of that might mean anything. But when I think of the years where I was wondering who would be Miami's best recruiter to help rebuild the team after Dwayne left, and when we weren't sure whether or not Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson were going to ever become stars, we didn't know who that recruiter would be. And I didn't know who it was. I didn't think Justice could do it, despite his Duke ties. Josh didn't seem cut out for that role. And with Dwayne Wade retiring, there was nobody to fill that hole. And so it looks like Bam is that guy. And he's willing and capable of making it happen. Now, recruiting might not necessarily result in landing Giannis Antetokounmpo or another superstar, because even with Dwayne in the roster, that was never a guarantee. But I think it means a lot to players to see how Wade is respected and treated by this franchise. It goes a long way to undo a lot of the bad will that I think LeBron may have maybe not inadvertently. He was probably very honest and forthcoming about things that went on between him and the Heat front office. And not all of it was positive. I think, you know, the fact that his friends and close acquaintances and business partners and things of that sort weren't, what's the right word here? It's not that they weren't respected by the team. It's that they weren't going to get any kind of special privileges. And for LeBron, that wasn't what he wanted. He wanted them to get special privileges. He wanted them to be able to travel on team planes and things of that sort. You know, without that kind of extended, you know, coverage and things of that sort, he was a little dismayed by the front office, and he left on bad terms. And I think when he left, he started to spread things about what this team was like and the culture that so many Heat fans take so seriously and appreciate so much. I think it could be a turnoff for some players. I think it, especially if a guy like LeBron, who has almost universal respect around the league, I would say 99.9% of the league appreciates what he does just because it works, because he's successful, because he is a very good teammate from everything that we hear from so many different people. I can't recall one teammate saying, no, LeBron's a jerk. I hate playing alongside him. He's generous to a fault. He gives gifts all the time. He's incredibly almost robotic in his knowledge of the game and of plays and things of that sort. And I think he helps you become a better player in a lot of ways. It's difficult to play alongside him, but it's also very rewarding if it fits. Either way, now with Bam there, I think you're starting to see that he is a product of this team's attitude, that if you're a player who's interested in getting better and winning, and you'll do whatever it takes to get there, then you combine all of that along with Wade's place in the franchise, with Jimmy's choice to come to Miami, with Bam's development, that's a hell of an argument. And Bam is the embodiment of that argument, why Miami and their system works. And he's going to be that moving forward, and hopefully for a number of years to come, because he is a part of this roster. He's happy, he's fulfilled, and he's accomplishing everything he set out to be. My final thoughts on All-Star Weekend are next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. On Friday night before the slam dunk contest, there was the Rising Stars competition. And while Miami was supposed to be represented by Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn, unfortunately Hero's injury seems like it's going to be a little bit more intense than we had originally projected it would be. In fact, when Tyler addressed the media during the media availability that morning, the day of the Rising Stars competition, he did speak about his injury and said that he actually thought he might be out to a few weeks before the All-Star, before the playoffs begin. I mean, we're looking at, it's mid-February right now. The playoffs would start in a couple months in April, that he was expecting to be out maybe as much as a month and a half more. That was really surprising. He also revealed that it was a foot injury, not an ankle, as was originally diagnosed by the team. And so there was no, at the time, there was no Heat PR person to kind of monitor what Tyler was saying, or to tell him, oh, you know, this is maybe something you shouldn't be revealing. Not that they want to necessarily put a lockdown on that kind of information, but Tyler, being young and inexperienced, probably should not have been talking about the diagnosis, the misdiagnosis, and the actual projected time where he might have, you know, been originally thought to have missed almost 2 months of action. Instead, he got some good news when he saw a specialist this week. It looks like he might be back sooner than expected. He probably will miss at least another week or so, maybe a little bit longer, but it won't be as long as originally believed to be. So that's good news for him. But the star of Rising Stars was Kendrick Nunn. He did participate, and he was representing Miami, and he did so very well. He posted 16 points on 7 of 11 shooting. So despite the shooting slump that Kendrick's been in over the last few weeks after, you know, trying to work his way back from an Achilles injury, he looked very fluid out there, was aggressive, as you know he's going to be with his shot, and it was knocking it down at a pretty high level. So that's great. Maybe it was just being in Chicago, where he's from, and that meant a lot to him. He said, it's very special representing Chicago, the South Side, myself and my family. I'm representing a lot, and it feels good to just be here and represent those things and what I'm about. Chicago basketball means a lot to me. And so you kind of saw that this was significant to him. He was at ease, you know. I'm not sure if he's the kind of guy who's going to be recruiting other players, but this being his home, he talked to a bunch of guys. He told them where to go and eat and things of that sort. He knew this town. He's comfortable here. He went to Simeon High School here. A lot of different things about the city that mean a lot to him. And it was nice to see him being appreciated and to appreciate the opportunity, because I think it means a lot to him to come to his hometown and be here after having gone undrafted and everything else like that. But he had a good night on Friday, and although he did not win the MVP of the Rising Stars game, he was still had a good showing, and again, it seemed like he was enjoying the moment quite a bit. On Saturday night, after Bam had already won the skills competition and before Derek won the skills competition, Duncan Robinson was representing the Miami Heat in the three-point shootout. I asked him during that same media availability in the morning if he felt comfortable, a concern of mine, you know, shooting as a standstill shooter versus coming off the racks. And he said, no, not really. You know, before I even came to Miami, I was a standstill shooter. It had been a strength of mine for as long as I can remember. I've always been a shooter when he was young and when he was in high school and in the college ranks. And only when he came to Miami did he start to expand his offensive repertoire, where he was coming off to so many screen actions and things of that sort. So he wasn't too worried about it. He did talk about having to get into a rhythm, and so he had been practicing working off of racks and things of that sort. And then in the actual competition itself, he was a little shaky. You could see it took him some time to get into a little rhythm there. And at first he started off well, knocked down, I think, three of the first rack of five. And then he kind of lost it a little bit, and I think was trying to... He had some jitters there. He said after the competition that he was a little, not nervous, but he was trying to rush to make sure that he knocked them all in and get enough time there, especially because they have that new three-point shot, which is a little bit further away. And, you know, again, it's a bright green ball that counts for 3 points. And so he was trying to get all these shots off as quickly as possible. And, you know, his rhythm was a little off time. Still a good shooting, but he was eliminated in the first round. He did not wind up competing for the trophy. And then, of course, our actual other all-star, Jimmy Butler, had himself a pretty good weekend here. If there's a takeaway from Jimmy's performance and everything else, I don't think he really cares too much about the all-star game. He turned the ball over a bit. It seemed like he was making the right play, making the right pass, wanting to play defense when nobody else did. That's just how Jimmy is wired. And it didn't really translate into a fun exhibition style of play. Everybody else is throwing lobs and you know, dunking from a distance and putting up 30-foot shots. That's not who Jimmy is. And so it didn't matter. He wasn't playing a lot anyway. He didn't get a lot of minutes, and it didn't really make much of a difference. But he's still very popular in Chicago. He got a nice ovation before the game on Sunday. He was cheered by the crowd at his media availability on Saturday, and still he just seems like he's still very, very popular here. And I talked to a number of people just riding in Ubers or people at restaurants when you tell them that you're covering the All-Star team and things of that sort, and they're all frustrated. The Bulls fans here in the city, and there are some, they're very, very upset. They all said the same thing: Garpax has to be fired. That's of course a reference to Gar Hurd, the team president, and John Paxson, the general manager. That front office has botched how Chicago has moved forward, and it's you know, something that they're all frustrated with. This team has not been very good. They haven't been able to build a team consistently, and that kind of backs up something that we've seen, I think, via Twitter also, that's kind of made concrete something we've realized now, that Jimmy's been right about almost everything. Where he was viewed as a locker room cancer, or a guy that was always throwing teammates and franchises and coaches under their bus, he was right about Chicago's front office. They didn't want to pay him. And while it comes across a little selfishly, he did not want to sign a long-term extension in Chicago because he knew it was going to be mismanaged there. And that's clearly been the case. In Minnesota, he didn't want to sign an extension there either because he didn't think Karl Anthony Towns had what it takes to get to that next level. He didn't really think much about Andrew Wiggins, that he had talent, but he had to work harder. And while we saw against the Golden State Warriors, where Wiggins had been traded to earlier this week or last week, you know, it seems like Jimmy and Andrew are still okay with one another. So I wonder if the issue is actually just Karl Anthony Towns. I wonder if Towns and Butler don't get along very well. But either way, Minnesota is not playing very well. They've lost a number of games. They haven't won anything since, I can't recall. They're struggling, and it seems like there is problems there as well. The coaching staff, the front office, Karl Anthony Towns might be a problem. He might not be as fully dedicated as possible. So, and now we're seeing what's happening in Philadelphia as well, with Ben Simmons unable to play alongside Joel Embiid, with the crowd booing Embiid, and the front office there not necessarily building the right team around their stars there. It seems like Jimmy, a lot of his behavior is pretty justifiable because he's winning a lot in Miami. He's done a fantastic job. And there was also a video there that's been making the rounds about him talking about Bam Adebayo and saying that Bam is the player that makes this team win. Conversely, when Adebayo was talking to the crowd when he was talking to the media after having won the skills competition, he gave credit to Jimmy. So it's just nice to see that both of them have a mutual level of respect and admiration. And I think that just speaks a lot to the chemistry of this team. They're playing cohesively. They're playing as a unit. I don't think there's any bad tempers there. I don't think there's anybody selfishly wanting more minutes or more playing time or more statistics or anything like that. For all the crap that Deion got, I still think he was well-liked in that locker room, even though he just wanted the opportunity to play, something I think a lot of those guys understand, and they didn't hold it against him too much, even though he reportedly apologized to the team and things of that sort, and that James Johnson had done the same. Either way, this isn't about them. This is about Miami's strong showing in All-Star Weekend. I think it was not necessarily a coming-out party, but it was good to see Derek winning a trophy, even though it was the source of some controversy. I think Bam absolutely became a much more prominent figure on the national stage, and Jimmy's going to continue to be Jimmy. And so it's good to see Kendrick and Duncan getting their opportunities as well, because I think it just shows that Miami is a very good team. that they have a number of good players on this roster, and that's what happens when you win, and you win a lot. You get the kind of representation you deserve, and Miami's earned every step of it. So we'll see what happens next. Not quite the second half of the season. They've got 20-something games to go, and hopefully they can continue to build as they incorporate new players like Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder. We'll see how they manage that in the next few weeks. There's no game until Wednesday when they face the Atlanta Hawks, so that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Yeah! Wrap it up, B.